Well, there's a reason we're beginning with that particular tune with this particular interview. Dreema Denver is here, the author of Gilligan's Dreams, The Other Side of the Island. It is all about her relationship, love at first sight, with Bob Denver. Welcome to the program, Dreema.
Steve, it is so good to be here with you. Hello.
Well, hello to you. You know, and I'm really very nervous about doing this because I got a call from a friend of mine who I know spoke to you, and you could hear that interview among the podcasts found at WGNRadio.com with my old friend Paul Lisnick, who said, you've got to talk to this person. You love old TV shows. You've got to read the book. And it's your fault that I now have insomnia. I was up until like 3 in the morning reading it. Again, Gilligan's...
Were you really?
Yeah, I really was. Gilligan's Dreams, The Other Side of the Island. And it does begin with this amazing... I think that you're going to prove everyone wrong who says love at first sight doesn't exist. Did you ever think you could fall in love, first of all, with Gilligan, and then secondly, do it in, like, I think it was about 3 seconds?
It was about 3 seconds. No, as a matter of fact, I tell the story of auditioning for the show that I was cast opposite him in and getting the part and saying to the producer-director, you mean I have to do love scenes with Gilligan? And she was like, yes, if you want the part, you have to do those. And I was like, okay. I couldn't imagine. You just don't think of that character, you know, as romantic or sexy. That just isn't how you think of him. But Bob Denver was very different. And, we were introduced the first day of rehearsal. He took my hand to shake it. And everybody, I mean, it wasn't just the two of us. The cast, whom we didn't know at all then, we were just meeting them, felt the electricity, and reviewers who reviewed the show on opening night talked about the electricity, the chemistry, the connection between, you know, Bob and Dreema. I mean, it was pretty amazing, and I don't know that I would have thought that existed, but it had to be the real deal because it lasted for 30 years, so, you know.
What do you think happens? Is it a physical attraction? Because you couldn't have known each other well. You just met.
No.
And in fact, the impression that you had, you just said, was Gilligan, really? You know, I mean, you were thinking the opposite. So what was it, do you think, not only in your case, but just in general, what is it that you think, I'm going to ask you to play Cupid now, that makes it work instantly for some people?
You know, I guess it has to be... I'm speaking for everybody here, and people may not agree, but I guess there has to be a large dose of physical attraction. I mean, there has to be something. I know he walked through the door. He was cute. He was funny. Humor has always been something that I've responded to, somebody with a great sense of humor. And, of course, that didn't come out on that. Well, it did a little bit, I guess, instantly on that very first handshake. But I guess it's got to be physical to start with. I used to say, I don't know if it was love at first sight or lust at first sight or what we want to call it, but there was something that was just really powerful. And I don't know, do you think that sometimes when you meet a person that you are destined to be with, because that's how it always felt with Bob, that there is just something there. Maybe you can't explain it. Maybe you can't put your finger on exactly what that something is, but it's there because it's meant to be there, because you're meant to find each other and be together.
Yeah, I actually...
How does that sound? Is that good?
It's really good because that's how I felt, you know, and we've been married...
Oh, really?
Yeah. My wife and I now 33 years coming up on, so yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's exactly how I felt. And at times, your relationship was idyllic, and at times it kind of wasn't. I'll get to the part that kind of wasn't in a moment, but I want to talk about the good stuff. I want to talk about the side of the island people know about. So one thing people do know about are the other characters who were on Gilligan's Island. Now, you arrived late to the scene. Gilligan's Island had already aired, but they did these television movies, the other side of the island, and they return to, and the Globetrotters go to the island or whatever it was. They had all these specials. You were on one of the specials, and what you write about in the book, among many other things, are the cast of characters, and you said, wow, these are all amazing people.
They really were, and, you know, that's not just looking, you know, back with rose-colored glasses or anything. They were wonderful. I was around for all the Gilligan movies, so The Rescue from Gilligan's Island was my initial meeting with all the castaways, and they could not have welcomed me more with open arms. They acted like I had been part of the group forever and ever and ever. It was just a real, Sherwood Schwartz also would be included in that. It was just a real welcome, you belong, we're happy to have you kind of feeling, which was a really great thing. And the thing about that cast, they truly were pretty much what you see is what you get. Like Natalie Schaefer, who played Lovey, I mean, she was exactly that character, lorgnettes and all. There wasn't, I don't want to say there wasn't any acting involved, because I don't mean that as an insult. It was just, she was very much that character. Jim Backus, I mean, funniest guy possibly on the planet at that time.
So Jim Backus, for those who don't know, Natalie Schaefer, you mentioned, was Mrs. Howell. Jim Backus was Mr. Howell, but he was also Mr. Magoo. And he was really a serious actor for a time, an award-winning actor.
He was. Yeah. Rebel Without a Cause with Sal Mineo and, you know, a lot of movies back in the day. He was amazing. And then you have Alan Hale, who is exactly what you would hope he would be. I mean, a big, burly bear of a man, gave the best hugs, and jolly and jovial and generous and kind and fun with the fans. And, you know, he was what you would expect. And then we had Russell Johnson, who was, much to my surprise, I found out during the third Gilligan movie, Russ was a World War II hero, and something that I don't think a lot of people know. He was shot down in the South Pacific during World War II. And, you know, then, of course, Dawn Wells ended up being one of my dearest and closest friends. I mean, Dawn and I were, we did personal appearances together, and, you know, as Marianne and Mrs. Gilligan. And so losing her was, I don't think I've quite yet come to believe that she's really gone.
Yeah.
You know, she was just. Did you ever get to meet Dawn?
Yes, actually, I did, and just the sweetest person. And I interviewed her my first time ever when I was in college radio. Now, who speaks to someone who's still, you know, in college radio? She was happy to do it. And
Dawn Wells, of course she was.
Yeah, she was just so wonderfully sweet, which makes me a Marianne person. But then again, not everyone was a Marianne person, and Tina Louise had this on and off again relationship, as I have read, and didn't want to be typecast as Ginger, and that was the problem.
Yeah, that was, you know, it's so funny. I was not around, obviously, for the series, so I didn't know her the way the rest of them knew her in that capacity. Now, I have been around her over the years two or three times. We did the White House together, the Castaways, so I was there with her for that. Good Morning America, 1 year in New York, I was there and met her for that. And I have no bones to pick with Tina. She was always very sweet to me. When Bob passed away, she sent me a personal note to say how sorry she was. But I think when it came to the original series, you know, she had, I think, had it misrepresented to her by her agent that the show was going to center around her movie star character. And so the way I remember the story, and I hope I'm getting it right, was that at some point her agent, or maybe she went directly to Sherwood and said, you know, I thought it was going to be this way. I thought it was going to be, you know, everything centered around me and what I'm doing and all of that. And Sherwood said, you know, Tina, the show is called Gilligan's Island, not Ginger's Island. You know, obviously it's going to, and I thought they did such an amazing job during the series of spreading. I mean, like, different characters would be the focus at different weeks. Everybody got their moment. And But I think it was, you know, she didn't, from what I understand, she wasn't crazy about being typecast as that character. And so when the movies came along, she didn't agree to do any of the three of them. And what was so funny for The Rescue, it was a wonderful actress named Judith Baldwin came in and did Ginger for that movie. But Bob, we'd go back to the hotel at night and he would laugh saying, Tina is getting more publicity for not doing this than she ever would have gotten if she had said yes, because everybody wanted to know, you know, why is Tina Louise not doing the show? That was the big, you know, that was the big thing. So, but I personally never had any issues with her. She's always been very sweet to me the few times I've been around her. And but I guess there was, you know, I guess there was a challenge every now and then being part of the ensemble cast.
Two very important questions for you before we take a break. One is, did she really talk with this whispery movie star voice that was so sexy in real life?
I think she did kind of. I mean, she was really didn't she do like a great Marilyn Monroe?
Yes.
She had that whole breathy thing. I don't think she talked. I think it was exaggerated, certainly, for Ginger. But I do have to tell you, that woman had the most beautiful skin of anybody I had ever laid eyes on. And it was very interesting because Bob had told me over the years before I actually got to meet Tina that, you know, when they were on the back lot filming at the lagoon, she would always have a parasol. She would never let the sun touch her skin. So when we were at the lighthouse and we were walking that breezeway that goes into the Oval Office by the Rose Garden, we were walking through there, and the minute we came out of the building and went into the sunlight, I don't know where it came from, but suddenly there was a parasol and it was over her. And I was like, whoa, that's how she has this peaches and cream complexion. You know, that was beautiful. And it was true. The parasol, I guess, was tucked away somewhere. And the minute the sun came out, it was out, you know.
Well, the dermatology physician's assistant we just had in the studio would be very happy to hear that. And one more quick, you have to answer this in like 5 seconds. If the professor was so smart, why didn't they get off the island?
Well, you know, we always wondered about that. Bob was going to ask that question, and finally we heard Russell answer it. And Russell said, if you were stranded on an island with Ginger and Marianne, would you fix the boat?
Perfect.
So there you go. There's your answer.
I love it. Gilligan's Dreams, the other side of the island, Dream of Denver, is here. Well, we heard about the happy stuff. Two words I would describe this book: brutally honest. And we'll talk about what I mean by that when we come back.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic point aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailor man, skipper brave and sure.
I don't think you can hear that and not smile. We're talking with Dreema Denver, the widow of Bob Denver, the great comedian. Is it still hard when radio hosts like me say the widow of Dreema?
No, I really do prefer the wife of the late Bob Denver. There's something about the word widow
that
makes me feel like I'm old and decrepit. Or
no!
Something. I don't know.
No,
Maybe I shouldn't say that, but it's okay. I'm just happy to have been married to him, and it's an honor to represent him and sort of fill in for him now that he's not here. So I'll take it any way you want to put it to me.
I want to put it to you the right way, and I'll tell you, the book Gilligan's Dreams is totally brutally, as I said, honest. So I want to talk about a little about that. So you had this wonderful marriage, but it wasn't idyllic. For starters, he had a drinking issue. Did he not?
Yes, he did. And, you know, I debated whether or not to go into that at all, because I didn't want people to think differently about him. But years before he ever got sick, and years obviously before he passed away, Bob thought I was a good writer. So he said, honey, once I'm gone, if you want to write a book, tell our story with our son and all of that, do it. But if you do it, be straight with it. Tell it like it was. Don't pull any punches. Just lay it out there. So that's what I tried to do. And what I have found in this second edition is that I think folks really appreciate it because a lot of people struggle with drinking issues in their family, with their spouse, with their parents. You know, it's not something that that people as a whole escape. I mean, it's something that people go through. So part of the reason for writing the book, or a huge part of the reason, was I have, you've read it, you know, I've been in a lot of valleys in my life. And in our marriage, we went through a lot of challenges. And for me, it was about inspiring people to know that you could be in all these valleys and somehow survive and even thrive. And that was one of the first challenges we had, was the fact that he liked to drink. You know, he couldn't have just one drink with a glass of wine with dinner. It had to be, you know, a cocktail before and a glass of wine or two or three during, and then and yet he would go for months, sometimes even years, with nothing, you know, no drinking at all. So, but I thought it was something worth talking about for the people who do struggle with that.
Well, and you struggled with more than that. Now, at some point in time, maybe I'll have you back on the air and we'll just talk about this topic, because it was, I don't know, a few months ago when we had a guest on the show, a high-functioning young man, autistic. He went to high school. He did very, very well. And then he went to college in the UK, to Cambridge. He is a Rhodes Scholar, so quite a brilliant. And he wrote a book about what it's like to walk in his shoes. And he said, if they cured autism, then I wouldn't be who I am. So it turns out you had less functioning than him. You had a baby, and that baby wasn't the perfect baby that all moms and dads want. And maybe I just said that very wrong, because in some ways, probably Colin was, or Co, as you called him also,
well,
was
perfect.
Well,
everybody's calling him Co. It's actually Co.
Co, sorry.
Like his middle name.
Yeah.
Yes, Co.
So,
Colin.
Yes. So, at first, and again, different era, but at first you were told, they used a word I don't even want to use on the radio, you know, that begins with the letter R, but it turns out he turned out to simply be autistic. But you both, as parents, dedicated your life to his life.
We did. And I wanted people to know that about Bob. You know, you think of you know, Gilligan. I remember people saying when the internet first, you know, kind of kicked off, and people would send emails and say, what happened to you? We never see you anymore. And you know, that what was going on behind the scenes on the other side of the island in his private life, people weren't aware of. But our son was born in 1984. He was diagnosed with the R word, severely with the R word, initially. And then thanks to the movie Rain Man, you know, that I can't remember, that came out in the late 80s, I think. And and suddenly autism was very acceptable. And people kind of thought they knew what that was, if you said somebody was autistic, because they watched Dustin Hoffman, you know, portray an autistic man. So soon the doctors were referring to Colin as severely autistic. Now, Colin is, he is 37 years old. He is still nonverbal. I've never had a conversation with my son. I don't know what he thinks. I know if he's unhappy, he'll let you know those things. But it's a real interesting journey with someone like Colin, who did not have any savant characteristics. We kept hoping, like the young man that you were talking about, we kept hoping that something would kind of present itself, but nothing ever did. So what we did, Bob and I, our whole focus after Colin was born was to make sure that he had a life that would give him self-assuredness in knowing that he was good exactly the way he was. And certainly we did programs. You read about those. We did things to try to help him, but we just wanted him to, you know, never be in a situation where he was treated badly or made fun of. And we were successful in all of that. And I have, you know, people say it's rationalization, but I tell you, I have learned so much from having him in my life that I would never have learned without him, that he has truly been a gift. It's been frustrating sometimes and exhausting, and in every way, you know, physically, emotionally, financially, all those ways. But I wouldn't trade it because he is valuable. And I think that's what we need to know. Just because people are different and don't connect with other people in society the same way you and I do, that doesn't take away their value and their worth. So I learned that in a big way.
Extremely well put. And I'm sure there are parents of children and in a similar situation who are now a lot younger than Ko that are first learning to deal with this, which is unimaginable. I'll tell you, reading this book may help, but in addition to that, hearing your words may help as well. And you were brutally honest also about Bob's condition toward the end and about playing your role, one you never rehearsed for, as caretaker. All of that is in the book Gilligan's Dreams, The Other Side of the Island. Dreama Denver, it is my honor to talk to you. I was always a fan of Gilligan's Island, but you know what? I bet you've not met a person who hasn't said that, and for good reason.
Most people seem to feel that way. And I just have to say to you before we end up closing this, you know, that when I talked to Paul, your friend.
Yeah, that guy.
He made it really clear that you were like the elder in this whole thing.
Oh, well, he's...
I heard you talking about him being your old friend.
Yeah. Yeah, he's clearly much older than I. And you know what? I've got a newscast to go to, so I don't have time to explain how old he is. That would take way too much time. Dreama Denver, thank you so much.
It was so great to see you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.